the return of print media. But I guess it's more the kind of power of print media.
Just thought of a conversation I had, literally to my face, like, the education's dead. Like, with the professional, it's dead.
Wow.
To me. And I was like,
there's always an idiot out there.
But that supercharged me.
I think magazines have kind of quite a historical place in barbershops and salons anyway, as kind of almost part of the fabric of the actual space.
While we've got a lot of white label that's attractive, go and ask how many people are selling it. How do you teach your team to use it? How do you teach them to use it on people? And how do you then exit that through the door and make it profitable?
Sorry to stop you there, but how are you getting that education into people, and how do you work retail with the layout of self-employed in a shop?
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laband, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. We're here at the Victoria Warehouse in Manchester at Haircon in this wonderful outdoor podcast arena, or maybe a stage. But anyway, we are here with Ian Harold, Attitude and American Crew, I guess, in the T-shirt that you're wearing. We have Phoenix Thompson, Global Educator for American Crew. And we have Ben Knight Evans, or Ben Evans, depending on which thing you're reading, who is the editor of Faded magazine. Really good to have this conversation. Thank you all. Really, I wanted to talk about the kind of, I've put down and called it the return of print media. But I guess it's more the kind of power of print media, because it does seem to hold something still quite magical. And it's not necessarily a legacy thing, because it's not just oldies like me that aspire to front cover of magazines. I think the generation of new barbers are very excited. And the feedback I've had from Faded has been incredibly positive. I guess it's the first question's got to go to Ben, as into what was the why? Why a new magazine in this arena?
Events like this that kind of inspired Assembly, who publish Faded and Creative Head, to start a men's hair magazine. And it's barbering, so that goes beyond men's hair, I think. And I'm very cautious of, like, the language used to describe what it is that we're covering in the magazine. So barbering is what covers it, but we know that word is evolving itself anyway. But that they were just getting the feedback that people do like to see their work in print, and it's a useful place for people to have conversations, really. I think magazines have kind of quite a historical place in barbershops and salons anyway. It's kind of almost part of the fabric of the actual space.
Yep.
And I guess in the proliferation of social media, which we're all involved in one way or another, whether we want to or not, there's something about stopping and spending time with an object and reading something, even if you only do it once a year when you go on holiday, that is completely different to how you're consuming media elsewhere. So I think we, from the beginning, we're trying to think about how to serve the industry, how we kind of speak with the industry to then get their words across. My role very much, and I come from a magazines background rather than a barbering background, with the magazine is as much as possible to hand over the mic to barbers to kind of talk about what's interesting to them and to show their work, whether that be through the words or through the pictures. So I don't know if that kind of answers
that. And, I mean, feedback for you about the magazine initially, is it all positive, or have you had critiques about, is issue two?
You know when you talk to your AI and you're like, can you actually give me the bad cop version of it? I've definitely found myself saying that in real life, because it's not that useful. For, you know, it's inevitable we're not going to have done it perfectly on the first issue. So it's really useful for us to get the kind of realistic feedback. But I think people are just really glad that there is a magazine talking about barbering in the UK. So I think the more people we speak to and the more we kind of grow it, I think that's the fact that it's there before we even get into the granular detail of what they like and dislike about the magazine is actually just a really positive thing. So that's something, some energy we want to kind of run with, really.
Excellent. And obviously, from American Crew's point of view, you were responsible for the front cover.
Directing hair, yes.
And you were in there getting your hands dirty on it. Is that the way?
I'm like the architect who draws everything, and then I get
you do all the work.
My builder,
basically,
to do it.
Excellent.
He's the grafter.
Excellent. But it was
there was plenty of graft from everyone on that day. Don't undersell yourself on that.
Was there a reason? What was the reasoning behind the front cover?
That is totally on Ben.
Well, again, we kind of definitely developed it, but I mean, everything we kind of started with the magazine was about conversations that were coming up from the barbers we were talking to, and that was at every level, whether they were just session, whether they were just in the shop, whether they had a business owner. People spoke to you. You're a feature in the issue as well. And the issue that kept coming up over and over again is just what it is we are to do about that early career, early part of careers for barbers, in or out of education, apprenticeships, you know, the self-employed model shaping, you know, the ability for people to do apprenticeships, that there needed to be some attention paid to barbers right at the beginning of their career and how they can be supported formally and informally. So it kind of then wrote into itself that I was like, you know, we need to spotlight that properly. It's come up in various different features in the issue, but why not put these young barbers on the cover, show them and, you know, show them as people and hear their words in the magazine too. So we kind of spoke to a few of the people who were kind of mentoring. So Chaddy Masangi and Tarek Howes and a couple of others about getting people who were in their shops earlier in their career. Got four of them down, shot them all. And we just thought, you know, whatever picture works best for a cover is where we're going to put it. And I always knew that we wanted to do the back of the head for the front cover because there was no singular person that could represent the entire industry. So I feel like that's why we wanted to kind of have the, have the back of someone's head, so they kind of almost, it would be an intrigue and not making a singular statement. And then American Crew were kind enough to kind of support us having the back cover as the front. So basically it's nice that we've done things kind of back to front rather than the right way around.
I think in the barbering world, the kind of back of the head seems to be a much more important part of the gig, I think. But very brave to do that. And you two obviously have got a career in education, but still have this kind of creative input.
Yeah.
How has that sat with your careers? Because, you know, obviously some careers are longer than others. but you've always made sure, you know, you've certainly had an affiliation with American Crew throughout. And
well, my job now is like really what I do is kind of create the collections and you know, like concept the education like collection for the year, like on a yearly basis. So I spend a lot of time researching and creating the content, and then we shoot it, we do the curriculum, we do the how-tos, and then I get Ian to teach it, right? So like we hand it over, and it's like, it's super important. Education makes me so excited. And I think, especially like being here, you kind of, it's been so long since I've had like that kind of feeling again, watching everyone else working. It's so great. But I mean, you know, young barbers and spending some time with them at the shoot was so incredible. I remember when I was 16 doing the same thing you are. Yeah, it's awesome.
No, well, I think that's the bit. I think we're every barber, whether you're doing it on for a photograph or a snap on your phone or whatever it is you're doing it for, I think good haircuts make you feel good as a barber, I think. Do you know what I mean? Is that right? Do we agree with that? And I think you do put so much of yourself into it. So to have this medium where not only are you making something that you've done a good job of, that it's caught, captured, and then tangibly exists in print, it has more value for some reason that it's on paper than on your phone. And I think that's quite, I think that's really lovely. I really like that.
And there's a rawness to it though as well, isn't there? I think, as Ben said, you've got a tangible object in a photograph. It's not backlit anymore. It's shot. It's a frozen moment in time.
Yeah.
That you can keep forever. You know, you said about why you're on the, what's so good about being on the cover or something. People keep them, don't they? It's a trophy. Social media's gone in 20 seconds. It's a swipe.
Yeah.
That's something that's tangible and will stay with you. Yeah. And I think that's why it's so important for people in barbershops to have something that they can be drawn back to. To say, come and look at it. It can be on the coffee table. It's a moment in time that you can keep.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really important with being in a magazine.
Yeah.
But, interestingly, you say about designing a collection. And I think that's the one thing that I think is kind of out of our normal remit. You know, we create a haircut or you make a haircut or you know, you have an idea of what that haircut's going to look at the end. It's a different set of kind of tools to make a collection and put a set of pictures together, whether it's for awards or competitions or for a magazine.
Yeah.
What's the kind of practice? What's the exercise?
Oh my goodness. How long have you got? For me, the way I do it is truly about like, okay, cool, like fashion. A lot of my concepts for collection come straight from fashion, music. watching that and like, you know, listening and looking at fashion shows consistently throughout the year. And then I'll get sparked by something really cool that just sets off. Like the last collection we did actually came from a Stone Island campaign that they're still doing. It's super cool. And that's like that little moment of inspiration I'll get, and then that's how I'll create a collection. And then it's like mood board and imagery and clothes and stylists and everything that comes together to execute into the shoot, which is never an easy job, but it takes about 6-8 months.
But to kind of envisage what that collection's going to look like that far in advance, you need that mood board progression to get there. Because you look at mood board one compared to the one that you're using.
And I keep and them all. Like, it's hilarious. I keep them all. Like from slide like 1 to 50, I have them all.
You never know what you're going to revisit later, even if it's to be binned there and then. I guess you can kind of always come back to an idea.
So where did it start from? Slide 1 is where it started from, remember? And then how it progresses is really interesting.
And do you find that... You know, I always found, I mean, like you say about Keen Your Magazines, upsettingly, I've still got front covers of mine that from like 1987. And like, there's only about 7 of us that were born in 1987, which is really depressing. Maybe. But you do hang on to them and they do mean something to you. But how do you, it's such a different skill base when you're working on an image that it's not just about, annoyingly, it's not just about the hair. It is having that right model. It is about the clothing. It is about the work. How important is it to have the team that you trust, that you've got someone looking after clothes, makeup?
Well, the person we haven't spoken about yet for this is Matt Healy, the photographer, who obviously shapes the entire feel of things. And it's actually the conversations that Phoenix and Matt and I were having at the beginning to kind of make sure that you have some kind of synergy. Making any kind of creative work, like from my side, the work is done before you're even in the room. If you haven't kind of got some kind of synergy and some kind of like mutual kind of direction you're going into, you're only going to kind of give yourself problems on the day. So it was about making sure we were kind of aligned. Obviously, the kind of concept came from us in terms of the casting, but we worked, you know, together as we, you know, narrowed that casting down and, you know, having a bit of a variety with the lads. So to go into a bit of a detail, we had Tom and Keaton, who came over from Chaddy's Barbers in Manchester, and Jaden, who came over from Tarek's in Cardiff, and Louis, who came in from a barber in Sussex. And so it was kind of making sure we had a variety of kind of looks amongst them, some that were kind of maybe had more polite hair, some that, you know, and Tom, who ended up on the front cover, who was our youngest model at 16, he's got the kind of maybe on the more of the punky side and the more kind of music infused thing. So kind of making sure we had variety in the casting so that we weren't kind of shooting the same picture and over again. I mean, we chose Matt to shoot it because he just has a really great approach to male beauty. I think he shoots a much broader range than that. He does fashion, he does all genders, but he, you know, he worked with Alistair McLellan, the photographer, beforehand, and they very much have a similar feel in that, in terms of it being an unadorned, beautiful image. We worked just with natural light on the shoot on the day. It was kind of the subject is kind of doing all the work almost, and then the hair is the crown on top.
The team were amazing. We had like the best time. I think, you know, we were saying after the shoot, right, like going there and being with young barbers as talent rather than models as talent was super cool, because, you know, Ian was like, right, I'm gonna make you feel good so you feel good when you're getting photographed. And that was that. And then the rest of the team were just incredible to work together. But it's all about the team.
But how was shoot day? How did you find it if you were going out in such a different way? And hey, let's face facts. It was quite an important picture. You know, it wasn't, you know, launching, to be on the front cover. To do the front cover of issue 378 is very different than issue 1.
I think one of the things that helped that sort of feeling was definitely bringing these young guys into an environment that they've never been in before. Seeing the newness of it through them was incredible. So I've been fortunate that I've worked on a lot of shoots with really great models and really great teams behind me over the years. But working with these young guys, fresh and new in the career, looking so excited and enthusiastic about not only being the models, but you've never been in that kind of studio environment. And then you've got the likes of Ben bringing them over to the screen, making them look at themselves and seeing how the photography is getting produced. That's a dynamic that they were blessed to be part of, because day to day, I was talking to one of them last night, And he was, you know, I was in the shop today. It was really great. It was this, it was that. He was like, but it was a totally different vibe. And really taking them, stretching them outside the comfort zones while making them feel safe and included. Yeah. And that they were very much a part of it. Phoenix was making sure that they were like really looked after and that nobody felt unincluded in any moment of the day, which was fantastic.
Yeah. The total feel good. I think, you know, like for me, it was super special getting to work with Ben, who I fangirled over when I first met him, couldn't believe it, and Matt Healy in the same room, plus it's me and then my team, and then Young Barbers. It's just like this beautiful, really nurturing, cool environment, which I don't think always happens when, you know, you're doing a shoot and stuff. And then I think that travels through the magazine. I think it's very, like, I mean, the care factor of the content in the magazine and the shoot is like a 10 out of 10. It's really nice.
And is this a plan to continue to really keep supporting the kind of new and undiscovered talent?
Absolutely. Like, regardless of whether they're on the cover for every issue or, but they will always, I think education is absolutely central to, I mean, education is part of entertainment in the industry now anyway, but it's absolutely central to kind of, it's, if anything, if we have a purpose beyond making the magazine a success, if we've got a purpose for that success, it's about keeping the industry kind of going. And I think it's already on such an amazing trajectory. It's kind of something you want to kind of encourage further as well. And that can't be done without supporting right people right at the beginning of their career. But it takes me something you said in your interview in the magazine too, and that learning never stops. And that you're like 40th year of your apprenticeship still. And that actually, that isn't something that is formally done in the first couple of years and then you're over. It's a full learning process. And I think kind of putting some spotlight on.
No, I think I'm really excited. It was really lovely to be included in the first issue, even if it was as a legacy barber. But, but you know, I think it's lovely that there are, you know, young people, you know, that young magazine approach that people do have that ability to get involved. Mm-hmm. So let's run along the line then of how we can give maybe a little direction or pointer to barbers out there that are making good content, doing great stuff on their phone, to move that and elevate that to be magazine attractive, or to step off the, you know, to step out to you to make it. Yeah, we want to include that.
I mean, what, in terms of for us, for choosing people for
content? Or how they can get involved with getting their work in print.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be unrealistic for me to think that that's an ambition for every young barber, if that's where they want to be. But in terms of the editing and decision-making process, you have to choose to put content into something is different to social media, where you can churn something out and it almost disappears after, you know, in a story sense. That disappears straight away. So that kind of committing to what you have to do for an image and making selections and choosing teams of people that you want to be together, that is always going to come from building relationships and being as good a communicator as you can. And, you know, it goes down to that conversation you have right before you cut someone's hair when you've never met them for the first time. You really have to, in a very quick period of time, understand them.
Yeah.
And it's the same for all the creative work they'll go on to do, that actually the best work will come from truly being understood and understanding the other people that they're listening to as well. So I think regardless of whether that was to serve an ambition to be in a magazine or just to make an amazing photograph that goes wherever, whoever you're kind of working with, whether even if it's just you and the model, to, you know, to really put energy into communicating well with them and to actually enjoy yourself doing it as well. Mm. I don't think
I think that's the bit. I think with the whole journey of the industry, whatever you're going into, I think it still has to have some reflection of you. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're, you know, we've been chatting earlier, and if you start copying other people's work, something that wins, I know, British Men's Hairdresser last year, if you just copy it, it ain't gonna work. It ain't gonna win anything. You know what you're doing is discovering your own direction and what you want.
Because that can't be fake. So that can't be, you know, if you're kind
that's
of actually
the individual. Definitely. But getting that opportunity, you certainly see it here. I mean, I'm amazed by how many young barbers are on stage doing their first pieces. Mm-hmm. And, you know, allowing a few of the oldies to still get up and shake a leg. But it's a very young approach to the industry, which is driving it and hopefully, you know, mentoring it at the same route. American Crew has kept a very strong foot in the fashion of men over since its inception 33 years ago, under, I don't know, four owners now, five owners. something like that. It's swapped around a little bit.
Yeah.
But the running through has been the importance of fashion and men's fashion. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's kind of it's coming in the 90s. So well before this explosion of men's grooming and men really understanding their look. Why is American Crew still a relevant product and a relevant company in this pond today?
I think it's more relevant.
Okay.
I think it's more relevant than ever. Talking as an educator and as a salon owner, because I do both, I still cut hair 5 to 6 days a week. So I don't just stand on a glass box and preach from an education standpoint. Mm. I think one of the things that it's always had for me looking in has been, it's always tried to remain true to its core. So as Phoenix talked about how she goes on and creates a collection, education has always been part of its core. So even though we're a product that you can get anywhere, we've always had a core in delivering for men. We've never been a brand that has catered for colour in the masses and then, oh, we'll do a little bit of men's.
Yeah.
We've always been men's focused, and that's why I think it's true to its core and its belief that transcends time. I think now moving forward with people wanting little bits of everything and jumping on and off labels, product, whatever it is, I think men's product has always been consistent with American Crew because it's still doing what it's always done. It looks over its shoulder, its history, while we have people like Phoenix driving it forward.
Yeah.
And she's really focused on changing that message, whether it's for print or whether it's for social, down to even how the product now works. Mm. So she's very much, let's get something that's one tube little base finish.
Yeah.
Because men travel lighter than ever before. We're not getting on planes with big suitcases. We need soap bags that are smaller. We need product that we know won't let us down.
Yeah.
But also we need innovation into keeping those young guys that we're talking about really excited about a brand. And as Ben said, how do you get to that? Well, by focusing and working and partnering with a brand can help you. By turning up and saying, what are you doing this week in a class? How do we get that from here to there? Well, you get them. Come and do the class, do some education, see if we provoke something. You mightn't like every element of a haircut, but if I can entice you to have the knowledge to go and try something in your shop, but provoke a conversation in your shop, therefore, that then builds confidence. And it's like the beating of a drum.
Yeah.
It's always present. Sometimes today, American Crew's not here, but we're here talking about it. That's what keeps it relevant.
Yeah.
It doesn't need a big runway to keep American Crew relevant. It needs belief that it won't let its consumer down. And I don't mean its consumer as the end user. I mean its consumer as the young barber, the old barber. Mm-hmm. So building that community inside the industry is massive to us in American Crew and always has been.
Right, cool. And I think, I may be wrong because my research lets me down almost consistently, but yeah, an awful lot of American Crew imagery has been coming from outside of the UK for quite a while.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm unsure how relevant that has been to our market. Mm-hmm. I think the UK, and I think we should be quite proud of the fact that the UK does do something different. I won't say better, but we all know that's what I mean. But, you know, we do something different. And I think when we're using images that are coming in from maybe the US or other European countries, it doesn't resonate. It just doesn't sit.
Yeah.
Is this a change that American Crew is recognising that the UK is important or more important or becoming important?
I think it's always been important. The thing is, I think with American Crew is that, like, obviously from a global brand perspective, you have to feed every single country or every single market in the world, right? Obviously, because I'm from here, right, I have a huge respect for fashion and hair in this country. We did do a collection a few years ago, which was absolutely the UK. Like, it was very British music oriented. I think I would love to, I think from a marketing perspective, that probably would never happen from an education perspective, and what I create with education, 100%. I mean, shooting here is like the best thing ever. It's the look is different, the hair is different, and your end professional that I want to be in front of is different. And I think it's super relevant. So for me, yes, I would love to be shooting here more and producing more imagery from the UK. It's incredible.
And this was definitely like a reflection, I think, from our perspective of the brand's belief to allow you to kind of work with us in a very kind of unique tip. You know, this is a British print magazine. And I think that sometimes the lines, if we're talking about lines blurring as well, between kind of print and editorial and the way that we kind of engage with brands as well, this is kind of allowed to be that part of that conversation. You know, barbering's learning from hairdressing, which countries are learning from each other. Like, I've never been a huge one for, you know, identifying like hard lines between all of these different areas. And I feel like the way that they allowed you to kind of engage and it's a British story. These are all like, these are four British lads. You know, they're all kind of British people that were steering it. Matt's a British photographer. We could have still achieved great results otherwise, but it just happens to be that it's a thoroughly British storytelling that we've done because everyone involved in it was so. I feel like, yeah, that's.
No, I'm certainly not wanting to sound nationalistic or anything.
I
do think that, you know, if you have this kind of, if you have the heat of the centre of the fire is coming from the UK, and you know, I don't know if my accent gives it away, but I'm a Londoner. But, you know, and it's really exciting that it's not London-centric. You know, you're getting these amazing things coming out of Newcastle. You got some great stuff coming out of Scotland. You know, Tarek won't mind me saying that he's Welsh. You know, there's all this going on here in the island, and it's really hot. And I think it should be. It's interesting when I see our fashion and our skill and talent going out into the world rather than receiving from it. And I don't think I'll be honest with you, I don't think the industry here in the UK receives it that well from abroad.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah,
but yeah, and we're not great at like ringing our own bell that much as Brits, but creatively.
That's why I think this is a really exciting issue. And I'm only labouring the point because I want to make sure that you keep with that all the way through it.
Oh, we will.
Promise.
Am I hitting a right stone here? Are we liking this? I think I've got to turn back.
You've got a cover star in the audience over there.
Oh, have we got our car? Oh, right. Hey.
There he is.
I didn't recognise you from the front. I do apologise.
This is Tom, everyone.
I do think I just want to turn back again to product. Because I think product companies are having a very tough time at the moment where the industry is obviously... We're flying, we're doing great guns. Hey, I'm not getting into whether stores are doing well and if there's money going into tills, but you know, as an industry, it's flying. And product companies, I think, are finding that more difficult. I think we have to hold our hands up that with an awful lot of independents, chair renters and studio workers, they're not buying retail. They don't have the buying power to put, you know, £300-£500 worth of products on the shelf. So you're not, you know, American Crew aren't selling it. And there's been this kind of, I guess, this wash of own brand, white label that's coming in, which, you know, everything has its place. And I'm not saying one's better than the other. What, as a product company as strong as American Crew, and I'm a huge fan of the education from American Crew, I think Ace is... Certainly Ace 1 and 2 that I do know well, I think are still relevant, or if not more relevant and important now than they ever have been. But how as a product range does that integrate in this market? And I know you're creatives and I know I'm talking finance, but it must be a conversation that has bounced past your ears at different points.
So being somebody that, as I say, works in a shop 6 days a week, I think the conversation goes back to fundamentals of education and also ego. So while we've got a lot of white label that's attractive because it's my own name on it, it's cheaper, it's more exclusive in theory because it's my name.
Yeah, it's got your name, yeah, of course.
Why I bring ego into it is fundamentally, go and ask how many people are selling it. So they're buying it all, they're putting it on the shelf because they want to represent my own brand. and we want it all about me. But without the education in how to use, what to use and when to use it, that's going to sit on the shelf much longer than American Crew will. So you've then put money into a label. You've put money into deciding what white label products you want. And you've got no educational support behind it. So unless you almost, dare I say, a used car salesman, can sell anything to anyone, the fundamental problem with why product doesn't move off shelves is nothing to do with whether it's a high brand or it's your own brand. It's to do with how do you teach your team to use it? How do you teach them to use it on people? And how do you then exit that through the door and make it profitable? So,
but sorry to stop you there, but if that's the case and you've got a team of chair, I mean, let's face it, most barbershops you go into, there's not an awful lot of employed. Most people are doing their own thing. How are you getting that training and that delivery? And seriously, with as a store owner, it's a benefit. If I can be flogging, you know, £1,000 worth of stock a month and I've paid 500 quid for it,
you know,
I'd have 500 quid. I'd be quite happy with that. How are you getting that education into people, and how do you work retail, the layout of self-employeds in a shop?
Well, it's a flip of a coin, and there's three sides to a coin. Because while you're asking me how am I doing it or how are we doing it as American Crew, the same goes to you with your own brand. You've got your own brand. All your team aren't your team because they're self-employed. Yeah. How are you getting them to sell your brand? Because you can't.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think you're right. I don't think it's selling, but it fits with this extension of brand.
So I think the thing behind it is, it all comes down to how well you address that self-employed model. And if you treat the brand that you use like a lot of salons do with colour, you've got to come in, you can be self-employed in here, but this is the brand that we use. And you have to use this brand, whether you discount it or whether you don't. How that works. But it's about how you set that initial stall out. If you turn around and you tell your self-employed staff that the brands that we use have to stay consistent, so that way you start then saying, if you're going to work here, we encourage you to use these brands. In that initial conversation, even though the self-employed individuals, you probably still have to give them some training.
Yeah. But I think we have, and I think, you know, anyone, and there's a few out there that have been around a while, no one's ever liked retailing.
No.
You know, I've had conversations for 40 years with, I'm not a salesman and so on. Mm-hmm. But what we do have is these new products that arrive. I mean, everyone out there has used spray clay and the new shampoos that have just arrived. You know, there are innovations going on in the brand that you can't get hold of that do something else. Mm. Why do we not find this ability to step from using a product that we can see gets great results, so the guy leaving with one in his bag?
I guess it's probably worth acknowledging that these conversations aren't only happening in the shop anymore. Every barber who's working with whatever products, it's out there on social media, that's their shop front. So they're actually speaking directly to a lot of consumers, because it's not only other barbers looking at barbers' kind of content. So, you know, they're also kind of, if they're working with whoever it might be, that's going to a much broader audience. It's also something we're trying to do with the magazine, not to bring it back to us, but like...
Oh, I do think
that we're trying not just to speak to the barbers, but this is a magazine to be in the barber shop. And actually, rather than there be too much content about, you know, this is how you squeeze an extra £50 out of whatever cut, that if a customer is picking up in this there too, yeah, they can equip themselves with, you know, knowledge and information so that they're not just coming up with a picture of someone that looks nothing like them, that's never going to happen, but they can be a little bit empowered to understand about how to get the best kind of cut and then enhance that conversation between them and the barber. And I think when brands work with places like us, is that they get the opportunity to communicate through the barbers, but also directly to the consumers to a certain extent as well. So I think the landscape is, from my perspective at least, kind of evolving, that the traditional routes of conversations are continually changing all the time. So that might be a direction that we might be heading.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that, because I think, and I don't know anyone that's done it or noticed it, but Faded turned up on an awful lot of people's social media who weren't necessarily connected to it. There did seem to be a kind of group, kind of like, oh, we got something to be proud of. I don't know if I see an awful lot of stores putting their retail up, unless it's white, you know, their white label. So that, yeah, no, interesting. I'm not going to labour on about that. I think I've covered it reasonably
That's well.
Yeah, the other aspect before we wrap up is that Faded does seem to have a very strong foot in education. It seems to want to be supporting the industry with education. And it's a hot spot at the moment. You know, there's some, possibly in my whole career, it's the hottest I've seen education being sold ever. And the quality is the best. And I'm a very old trained hairdresser, the old style. I've done a full apprenticeship. I trained in Knightsbridge. I trained with the best. And I know what I know. The training is so good. The access to training is so good. And the training that you can access so easily is associate as well. I mean, there's some really, really, really... I've cut hair 40 years and I watched someone the other day show me how to do long-layered haircuts. I don't know how to do long-layered haircuts, apparently. So, you know, I think it's a strange quagmire of the way we're sharing this information. Just to wrap it up, I guess two questions. One, why is keeping education in your company so important? Mm-hmm. And two, why personally do I see as an individual now that I'm still looking to learn things? 2 years ago, I'd not even listened to a podcast, and now we're the UK's number one podcast. I've got to say it. And that only came from really learning and really going through it. And, you know, I think 38 years of talking to people probably helped. So just to run it down the line, if we can, why training for individuals and why training? Why as a company do you need to have a plan of what training they're going to be delivered over a 12-month period?
Well, I mean, it's funny because, and I'll speak to the fact that, because I just thought of a conversation I had probably like 12 months ago with someone who literally to my face said, the education's dead. Like with the professional, it's dead.
Wow.
To me. And I was like,
There's always an idiot out there.
That supercharged me.
Yeah.
And I'm busier than ever. And everyone is like incredibly into education. It's so key and so important. And I think, for me, the one thing I said to myself is like, the minute you think you know it all, give it up. Education is so important. I think things like HairCon specifically really like speak to that. I mean, education is not dead. It is way more important than ever. In person is really important. And we've went digital for so, so long, which is amazing. It's brilliant. But getting back to in-person education and watching shows and doing this kind of event is like super important.
I'll ask you a question. Without education, how do you stay relevant?
I agree. I don't. I mean, I've got a young barber that's worked for me now for 2.5 years. 2.5 years ago, had never cut hair, and I had to stop cutting someone's hair the other day to go and ask how they'd created a look. Mm-hmm. And they've only learned their barbering from me.
Awesome.
And it was just lovely to see. I was looking at how they were cutting it at a glance. And I had to stop what I was doing to go over and go, how did you get that? Because what I last saw, it didn't. And that's, I think that's amazing. Curiosity. That someone I taught is now teaching me back. And she's 18, 19 years old. And
I also think
that definitely keeps you relevant.
I also think as well, just to touch on HairCon as a trade show, one of the most interesting things about this trade show, having watched it evolve over the last 3 years, is it's still people going to watch. There's not as many people walking around with carrier bags where they're buying all kinds and you feel like you're at a trade market. Everybody's here and all the brands that are here showing people things.
Yeah.
So it's a very engaged conversation because you're leaving with knowledge that you can communicate rather than a bag with 15 clippers and 12 air dryers and four pairs of scissors. I've left here for the last 2 years with nothing other than knowledge. Yeah. I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to leave it. I'm going to finish this run off with you. You've put training at a very important part of this magazine, and obviously not having a background in barbering, you've spoken to a lot.
Yeah.
Why do you think from the outside, why do you think education is so loved by the industry and that you've chosen to recognise it so heavily in print?
I mean, they're both the two key points that you just kind of touched on them. One, that your education actually never stops. all the way through your career, or shouldn't, if you want to keep it going. And two, that there are so many different formats of education going on at the time that, yes, there is a space for kind of the YouTube learning, but you learn in real places like this. You're learning in the shop floor, from individual conversations, from reading things. This education isn't a singular thing. And it can be a form of entertainment. It can be something a lot more serious. You can be picking up. There are still books out there. I'm a huge books person as well. Like all of these different things. And I feel like that's why it's such a rich kind of culture. And I think kind of beyond the actual physical craft of barbering as well, actual conversation is such a huge part of the actual job. Beyond, you know, what you can do within conversation with the person sitting in your chair is how you learn from each other as well. So education is conversation and vice versa for me.
Thank you. Well, I mean, wandering around, it's really nice watching so many people asking questions, engaging. And, you know, the one thing that I know has run consistently through my career is networking. You know, I opened my first store and the first thing I did is went to four shops that I thought were brilliant, introduced myself and asked them to help me out. And I think networking is a really important factor. Guys, thank you very much. Thanks. I just want to finish. I do think whether it's wanting a front cover of a magazine, whether it's wanting to flog a bit more product, whether you're wanting to inspire, it all comes down to education. Access is education. If you want the key to the door, learn how the lock works. And I think that's the key. You have to get educated. You have to find education. And as soon as you think you know it, go back and learn something else. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much for having us.
We've been The Noble Barber. I'm Anthony LeBand. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you on the next one. Thank you.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.